Okay, so by now we have a grasp, a little bit, on the topic of Gneivas Das, and we have seen that it takes on a few forms, and we started to talk a little bit about some of the practical ramifications, and maybe hopefully today you got to see a little bit more of some of the background sources behind some of these practical applications. So today, we'll just go into a little bit more depth and a little bit more detail about some of these. And just keep in mind that we saw that there really are two forms, maybe all emanating from the same ideas, but that the notion of, on the one hand, not stealing through somebody, not stealing from somebody with a false impression and some kind of a subset of gneva, and also the general mandate of honesty, of avoiding sheker, and of only communicating in a forthright way, so it really created two forms. That on the one hand, you can violate Gneivas Das in the context of a business transaction by creating a misleading impression, and therefore compromising the integrity of the sale. And that's one level of concern. And beyond that, in life in general, anytime you are getting somebody's goodwill, getting credit from somebody under false pretenses, that's also going to be a problem of Gneivas Das. So there are many different applications. We'll try to cover as many possible as we can today. So first of all, so just to expand on one that we started last week, but just to say a little bit more detail about it, and I sent out the sources, so the sources were a little late, but hopefully they eventually got around. The Gemara in the end of Hazav, the Gemara in the end of the fourth parak of Bav Metzia, which we alluded to last week, which talks about presentation, and that we shouldn't present merchandise in a misleading way. So if we're going to paint it, if we're going to puff it up, if we're going to prompt it, and going to place it in a certain way, plump it up in a certain way, that it looks better or bigger or fresher or newer than it is, so that seems to be a problem. And that the Gemara has, really in the context of Onah, that the fourth parak of Bav Metzia is talking about not overcharging or under-delivering. You can't charge too much for an item, nor can you provide an item that is less than what it's supposed to be. And coming off the heels of that, the Gemara there talks about if you are going to pump something up in a way that presents it differently, if you're going to paint it, if you're going to moisten it, and the like. So how does that play out in our contemporary context? Because it's clear that there is some kind of mixture of different stages here, that sometimes it is okay, and sometimes it's not okay, sometimes it's very not okay, and sometimes it's a little bit not okay. So the standard we gave last week was that there were three levels. That if you represent something in such a way that it looks like it's better than it is, and you sell it at the higher rate, so that would be worse than Gneivas Das. That would be Onah. That would essentially be theft. While if you represent it as better than it is, but you sell it for the correct price, now you just kind of lured them in through this belief that they're getting a better deal. So that's a problem of Gneivas Das. That's what we're talking about. And lower than that, if you just put something in the best possible light, but you don't either charge too much or represent it as something fundamentally different, so that's permissible. That's actually mutter. And that's a basic layout that we mentioned last week. It's the standard, for example, there's a contemporary sefer on much of Choshen Mishpat, Rav Yaakov Yeshaya Bloy, if that's a name you're familiar with. So he passed away a number of years ago, 10 years ago or so, and he wrote many Sfarim on Halacha in many different areas. And it's well known for a lot, but he has a multi-volume work called Pisrei Choshen on topics of Choshen Mishpat. I believe by profession he was actually a banker. So this was his area of specialty. Then he also wrote on many other things. He wrote on challah and shatnez and ribbis and the like, Chanukah and mezuzah. But in his sefer on Choshen Mishpat, so he focuses on, if you saw the Gemara in Bava Metzia, so the Gemara draws a distinction between new items and old items. And the Gemara says that you can paint new items, but not old items to look like new items. And essentially, that really represents this distinction, as Rav Bloy pretty much expresses it, or I believe that's what he's getting at, that to try to fool somebody into something that it isn't, that's going to be a problem of Gnevas Das. So it's when the Gemara says old things, Atiki, and you want to make it look like Chadasi, you want to make it look like new things, that's a problem. But if the items are new, so it's just a question of presentation, how are you going to make it look? So then that's legitimate to try to make things presented in their best possible light that is not changing what it is. So that is fine. And that's, again, what people expect and demand. So that is normal. So it's interesting also that there is a machlokas among the Achronim that addresses the question of, does it matter what the industry standard is? And so if everybody presents their merchandise in a certain way, does that help? And so if you're going to spruce up your merchandise, the house, the meat, the fruit, whatever it is, so that it looks fresher and better than it is, but that's what everyone does. And so people maybe know to take things with a grain of salt. Right? People maybe know that they have to adjust mentally to the expectations of the market. Does that matter? What do you think? Does it help if that's what everyone does? Gidoni, raising your hand? Okay, so now we're in between. Last week, at first we couldn't hear you, then we could hear you. Now somewhere in the middle, so tell me if I heard you right, because I heard it a very muffled tone. But I think you said it's all about misrepresentation, and this isn't misrepresentation because people know how to read that. Is that what you said? Okay, it's a fair position. That's the position of the Sma. It's the Sma, the commentary on Choshen Mishpat. Sma is short for Sefer Me'iras Einayim. It's written by Rav Shua Falk. So, on the one hand, that makes sense. So I think we had two other hands, one hand, another hand. I think we had Levi and Rafi, so I'll call them in a second. But just to express that in a somewhat scandalous fashion. So, and it's important to convey, especially talk about business halacha. So we always try to teach people that just because everyone does it doesn't make it right. Right? And that is certainly an important principle, and we certainly believe that. But there is a little bit of a qualification that sometimes when everybody does it, it does change things a little bit. That if something is wrong, it's not going to become okay because everyone does it. But sometimes the minig does determine things. So when there is a widespread practice, it does have an impact. So the question is that the case here? That if this is essentially not a completely straightforward presentation, but that is what the stores do, so, and that's what the customers know to expect. So, does that help? So, Gidon says it does help. But the question is, what does Levi say, and then what does Rafi say?
I say all this is very, very subjective.
Okay.
Thank you. It's very, very dependent on the circumstances.
So, that's the question, right? Do the circumstances help? So you're basically agreeing, right? You're saying that it's subject.
But I don't know if they always help, because if somebody is from a place where they don't do this, and say he goes to a place where it is done, he might actually think he's like getting more meat or whatever.
Okay, so that's a very important question also, right? That's a very, very significant chiluk that you're bringing up. That basically what Levi is saying is, why shouldn't we be obligated to be completely honest towards every potential customer, right? That if there's something that is done, that is the minig, so that might mean, okay, so 80% of the customers will know that that's how to adjust. But aren't I still deceiving some people? Because there'll be a percentage of the population that won't know. And if that's the case, so then should we say, well, listen, you know, you can't deal with every possibility if the custom is one way, so you have to expect people to understand that that's the custom. Or should we say, like Levi is saying, no, you have an obligation towards 100% of the population. And the fact that there might be a custom that the majority would know about, maybe even the big majority, why is that okay? So what do you think? Where would you side with that? Sorry, you want to comment on that? I know Ralphie's waiting, but if you want to comment on Levi's point?
I mean, presumably, why does it matter, like, what the people, the populace will think? Isn't, you know, Gnevis Das very much an internal consideration about not, you know, defiling yourself to lie? You know, these creations of Hashem, we're defiling ourselves by either lying or stealing, and so who cares what the other people think? Why should it be subjective? If you're lying, that's degrading yourself, and that's usur.
True. So the question is if that's what's happening. So the question, we're talking about an issue of communication, and it's not even direct communication, right? So you're indirectly communicating a message. The person who paints his merchandise, or who moistens, or who fluffs up his merchandise, is he lying? So he's not saying anything false. It's a question that his merchandise looks a certain way. So one could argue that it's only deceptive if it actually communicates a false message. So the question is, does it communicate a false message? So Gidon and the Sma are both maintaining that if that's the way it's done, if that's the way merchandise is presented, so then it's not a deceptive message. But Levi is saying, well, yes, maybe that's the way it's presented to people who know, but there might be somebody who doesn't know, and therefore there is a miscommunication. So just to sharpen your point, Ari, that you're right, that the sheker consideration is very much about who you are, and very much goes to a moral, self-defining level. But a lot of what this sugi is about is the assumption that there isn't overt lying, and it's all a question of, is your communication creating a false impression? And we should be concerned even to that level. So yes, we're concerned even to that level, but the question is that what's happening? You know, parenthetically, also to Levi's point, so a question about contemporary life that I don't know the answer to, and about contemporary law that I don't know the answer to, is that I'm sure you hear all the time about fake news. Right, so fake news, I think, in the past few years has been used as a way of criticizing newspaper reports that you think are not accurate. But there is a whole industry of satirical newspapers out there online, right? There is a whole concept of publications, mostly online publications, that are printing stories that are jokes, that are completely fake news. And some of them may be funny, right? Some of them have some humor attached, but I have no idea why they're legal, because there's always, they're not usually labeled as satirical newspapers. And some of them are more well known, some of them are less well known. So especially if they're not very well known and they're not labeled, there's always going to be some population that's not going to know it's a joke. So I don't know why that's okay morally, but I also don't even know why it's okay legally, because there's a libel issue in America. You can get sued if you spread and if you publish false information about somebody. There's a liability there, and that's true even if you're only lying to one person. So if you are in these satirical papers, there's always somebody who doesn't get the joke, especially because nowadays the way people get news, very often they don't even know where they're looking. They get it forwarded, it gets posted on social media, or it gets forwarded to them with a link, and they don't know where the link comes from. So people get articles from all over the place. They don't always check to see what paper it comes from. So if you're making up a fake story and you are fooling even one person, I have no idea why that's legally okay. And every once in a while, you hear a story about a senator or a congressman or a world leader who embarrasses themselves by quoting some satirical newspaper and thinking it's real and not realizing it's a joke. I have no idea why that's okay. Again, I'm all for the humor. I appreciate the ability to have a joke out there, but considering the fact that the joke can do real damage in terms of libel, I have no idea why. I forget, morally I think it's a problem, but I don't understand why legally, why it's okay. I think all these articles should have to be clearly identified as satire in big red letters at the top. And so that's essentially Levy's point, right? That how could you rely on some general policy when there may be a portion of the population that's not going to know about that? Now, against Levy, no offense, you could say, all right, but still, when dealing with the marketplace, so there's only so much expectation you could put on, especially when it's not a matter of overt falsehood, but it's something that just could create a false impression. So you can't be perfect. You can't necessarily expect that you're able to address every single individual. It's legitimate for there to be a minig, for there to be a custom. But I think we would still feel that the truly honest person, to go back to Ari's point, who is concerned with his own personal integrity and not defiling his personality, I think that was the term he used before, would not want to take even that step. So Rafi, I was going to your das before by implying I'd call on you earlier.
Psychologically, even if everyone knows, you know, like everyone refurbishes their stuff, still psychologically, like someone still might, especially because people make a lot of decisions with their emotions more than, you know, more than with like their brain sometimes. So, you know, psychologically, someone will say, okay, they'll know that it's been refurbished, but there still is a certain amount of, you know, drawing in the bias. So, it'd be life coach that it wasn't refurbished, and he'll, like, I was thinking, okay, in general, people do refurbish their items, but, you know, maybe this guy didn't. Maybe this guy's extra usher or something like that.
Okay, so that is a fascinating point, because there is a view on Achronim like that. I don't know if that's exactly what you're getting at, but maybe it is. That's a fascinating point, and this highlights even further the standard of honesty that the halacha might be looking for. So the tshuva is Divrei Malkiel, who is a classic Achron, or Malkiel Tenenbaum. So he is quoted in some of the later Svarim. He disagrees with the Sma. And he maintains that even if it's the custom to present something in a fluffed up way, it's still not okay. But not only for Levi's reason. By Levi's reason is a good reason. You should worry about even the minority of the population that might not know about the minig. But the Divrei Malkiel says more than that. And that what he suggests is to take it even in a more stringent position. That let's say it was even overtly stated. Let's say you informed the purchaser that this item is older, less fresh. But still, you present it in a way that looks different. That's still a problem of Gnevas Das. So how could it be, right? If the customer knows exactly what he's getting, you told him exactly what he's getting, how could it be a problem of Gnevas Das? So what Rafi, I think, was saying is, okay, maybe still people, even they know and they don't know, right? Is that basically what you were saying? So that's essentially the Divrei Malkiel's point. And it's quoted in some later Sfarim that explain it in a little more detail, the contemporary Sefer called Ole Yaakov, where he also spells this out a little more. He says that there's still a psychological impact of the visual appearance. And that even if you tell somebody that it's older than it looks, it's still it's less fresh than it looks, or it's just not what it's been painted to represent, they still are losing something because there's still a conflict psychologically between what they know intellectually and what they're seeing. And therefore, that's something that is playing out in a different way. And they point to the language of Rashi. If you saw, I put on the list, I highlighted the Rashi over there in Bav Metzia and Samach Amud Beis, that Rashi has one phrase which is particularly interesting. Now, we've been talking about Gnevas Das, and sometimes in some of the earlier sources you find Gnevas Das or Gnevas Halev. Right, here, Rashi's got a different body part that's highlighted. What does Rashi say? Give you a second, take a look.
Gnevas
Ayin. Gnevas Ayin, exactly, right? What does that mean? Stealing the eye, right? That basically you're catching their look. You're catching their gaze without it really reflecting the truth. And even then, you could probably split it to two ways. Like, maybe you got them to the table, but it isn't really what it's portrayed to be. Or that even when they have it, and they bring it home, but it's always at a disconnect from what it really is. And one of these contemporary Sfarim thought this was an interesting comparison. Is that just to give an example of how people can knowingly fool themselves. And so he made reference to the Ole Yaakov makes reference to the fact that sometimes if a person feels that he doesn't get up quickly enough in the morning, or he doesn't get to appointments on time, so what'll he do to get himself more on schedule? So he'll set his watch or his clock 10 minutes ahead. So he's the one who did it, right? So he knows that it's not the real time. But he's manipulating his own instincts by, okay, if I set my watch later, I will somehow have an impact on my own psychological understanding, and I'll think it's later than it really is, even though I know I'm the one who did it. So he brings this as an example of how people can fool themselves, so to speak. Now, parenthetically, there's actually an interesting discussion in the Tshuvas related to this, that if your roommate or your brother doesn't get up in time for Kriya Shema, doesn't get up in time for davening, so can you switch their clock so that they will be impacted by that? So there you have both a Gnevas Das kind of question or a deception kind of question for the sake of a mitzvah, or maybe also have a Gezel Shena kind of question because they weren't planning on you to change the alarm and they weren't planning on getting up and you're imposing that upon them. So that's a interesting discussion, Bechlal. It's maybe for a different time. But here, what this example is saying is that people do it to themselves. So that should certainly be legitimate, but it just highlights the fact that there can be a disconnect between what you intellectually know to be true and what you see in front of you. And maybe that's the concern here. So that's a fascinating range of opinions. And just to recap what we just saw there, that here, so the Gemara says you can't fluff up, we'll just use that as a stand-in for everything, you can't fluff up your merchandise. And we saw that, we mentioned three levels. To charge a higher price, that's the worst. To charge the same price but get their attention and their goodwill, that's what we're talking about as Gnevas Das. And a legitimate presentation, just at the higher end of the spectrum, that is mutter, and that's what the Gemara distinguishes, that you can't paint old stuff to look new, but you can paint new stuff, because painting new stuff means you're just presenting it in its best possible light, and that's okay. Now, if it's old stuff to look new, so does minig make a difference? The Sma and other achronim say yes. and should be understood because you're not fooling anybody. But we saw some limitations on that. Levy raised the important question, shouldn't we also worry about the minority of consumers who won't know about the Minig? And there's a whole other angle here, the Divrei Malkiel, maintaining that even if they do know, and even if you tell them, it's still a problem because you are psychologically creating a conflict that you are capitalizing on. And that's the language of Rashi of Gonev Es Eino. Okay? So far, so good? Okay. It's interesting also that this is affected, well, just to keep going with this business component. So if somebody is creating the impression that an item is worth more, so that's, as we've seen, a problem of Gnevis Das. And if somebody gives you the impression just because there is something that people associate with higher quality, right? You're not necessarily saying that this is actually a higher quality. But if people think that an imported item is better than a domestic item, and you represent it as a imported item, so that's also going to be a Gnevis Das consideration, because people feel, whether they're right or wrong, if people feel that that's something that adds value, and that's not really the case, so that's going to be within the category of Gnevis Das, right? How do we know that from our Gemara back in Chulin? How do we know that? Right, that's like the sandal case, right? The sandal that you convey is made out of the skin of an animal that was shechted as opposed to a less healthy animal that died on its own. So the Gemara tells us that's a problem. And we saw the poskim understood, even if you sell it for the right price, it's still a problem. So presumably that's the issue, that people have a mentality that it's worth more than it is, or that it's a higher quality item. So if you were to say that something is, if you were to say that something is imported when it's not imported, so then you're going to have issues. So this also should represent itself in terms of how do you represent the history of the item. So sometimes when negotiating, a seller will say that, oh, I'm making nothing on this. Right? That I had to pay so much to acquire it myself. So then you're paying so little, he'll tell the customer, that I'm not getting any profit, or I'm getting almost no profit. So how does that strike us from a Gnevis Das perspective? Right, if it's not true, right? If you're going to tell somebody that you're making nothing in terms of the differential, you're making close to nothing, so, and it's not true, how does that fit in with a Gnevis Das perspective? All right.
Getting a tremendous deal, so the psychology of the act of buying, you know, he has more direction towards making a purchase now that he thinks he's getting a good deal. So psychologically, it's Gnevis Das.
So that's one point. I think there's two different types of Gnevis Das potentially happening here. So that's one of them, right? That by saying you're making very little, so the impression that you are creating is that this is the standard wholesale price, and it's a special privilege this guy is getting to get it at this rate. He's not going to get it like that anywhere. So there's Gnevis Das in that way. And Rafi, you want to add?
No, this would be like an actual, you know, just collecting money from him problem, because he wouldn't have otherwise bought it from you.
So that's really the same thing, though, right? Because you're pulling him, even if the money is the right price in the end of the day, but you're reeling him in to the deal through this false representation. But there's another component to it, that you're also getting goodwill, right? That you're making it look like, okay, I'm a big friend of yours, I like you, so I'm giving this to you for cost, I'm not making anything on the deal. So the customer should have some degree of gratitude towards you for that. And that's its own kind of Gnevis Das. So what we've seen is that Gnevis Das has these two major tracks, and they both could be playing out in a situation like that. Now, you're both reeling him in under the false impression of a unique opportunity, and you are taking his goodwill that you haven't actually earned. But there is yet another level you could take this to. That there is a tshuva, Moshe Sternbach has a tshuva, where he quotes the Galya Masechta. The Galya Masechta is the Reb David of Novardik, it's a more classic sefer. And this is the first piece in the Galya Masechta, where he says that not only are you not allowed to tell the customer that you're not making any profit on this, or you're not making much profit on this, if it's not true, but what if it is true? What if you got cheated by the previous guy? So let's say the previous guy sold it to you for too much. So now you want to pass that on to the next customer and base your price based on what the previous guy did to you. So when you say, I'm not making any profit, you're telling him 100% factual truth. Does that change anything? Any thoughts? So it says the Galya Masechta, that's still a problem, yeah? Jonathan?
Yeah, you're taking his goodwill. Because now he thinks that exactly that you're doing a favor. He'll do a future favor for you.
But maybe it's still true, though, right? Because the fact is, you're not selling it for any profit. So is that still taking his goodwill? Benny?
From his perspective, it's still the same because he doesn't realize that the previous guy got ripped off.
Okay, so how does that factor into things? Because it's still true that the guy is not making any profit. So if he's looking for some understanding from the purchaser, so he's accurately saying that he's selling this at close to a loss. Okay, so here that seems to be the case, right? If we break this down into two parts, so we said before, if you tell the guy you're not making any profit, so there are two elements to that. One, that there's goodwill coming to you that you don't deserve, and two, that he thinks he's getting a rare opportunity. So here, there's just one of them. Because still, the price is still not reflective of the actual presumed value. And so when you create the impression that this guy is getting something at a special price, it's not really true. It's only because you, the seller, got cheated. So now that's why you want to change the price. That doesn't actually change the value of the item. So from that perspective, that the customer is being lured in, thinking that he's getting something at close to wholesale value, and it's not wholesale prices, it's just that the seller got a bad deal. So says the Galya Masechta, you still have to tell him that. If you're going to make this point, you mean. If the price is correct, and you don't want to say anything, so then you could leave it as is. But if you want to tell the guy that, oh, I'm not making anything, so then you have to say, I'm not making anything because the first guy ripped me off. And that could still be relevant, because essentially, if you have a purchaser who's telling you, listen, I think this should be cheaper, and the seller's saying, what can I do? I got to stay in business, and this is how much I paid. So then it could be legitimate if he is saying that, I know it's not worth more than this, but just I have to make profit to stay alive, and this is what happened to me. And he tells them all the facts, so then that could be legitimate. So still, why doesn't the buyer then go somewhere else? Because presumably it's not easy for him to go somewhere else, and he wants this one. And but he knows all that, so he's still willing to take it into the circumstances. That should be okay. There is a discussion in Poskim, which I don't fully understand because I think it should be worse, but just as far as this is concerned. So in terms of the Gnevis Das that comes from creating this misunderstanding about the price, So what about auctions? So when something is sold at auction, so sometimes there's a scam going on. Now, we know that you have everyone assembled and people are bidding and the highest bidder wins. So sometimes you have less than reputable people who will sell something at auction and they will hire somebody to be a ringer. They'll have an associate who's there in the audience who's also bidding with the goal of driving the price up. So what do you think of that? And did I bias your conclusion by saying disreputable and scam when phrasing the question? So, I don't know if I was gonave your iron with that, but what would you say about that? How does that strike you? Yes, Benny.
And it just seems like it would be completely, you know, theft. Like, I thought that I'm bidding against somebody else, so that's why I have to pay this higher price. But really, whatever price I should have paid is much lower, because there's no one else against me.
So is it Gnevis Das or is it more?
Probably even more, because you're just, like, literally just stealing from them. You hired a guy specifically to take money so that he gives you more money.
Yeah, so I agree. So I think that's why I'm a little surprised some posts can discuss this as Gnevis Das, but it's probably more than that. It's probably Gnevis Mammon. That there's two elements here, though. It is interesting because you could break it down into both Gnevis Das and Gnevis Mammon separately. Rafi, did you have a comment about that you wanted to say? So, because it's Gnevis Das in the sense that, oh, everyone's bidding on it, so it looks like everybody wants this, or more people are bidding on it, so that attracts people. We know that everybody wants something that everybody else wants, and that has a very, very disproportionate impact on how people make purchases, especially in the internet era where everything is ranked. You go onto Amazon, if Amazon says that this is a bestseller, which is not a new concept for the internet. Bestseller lists have always been, or for a long time, have been a part of the business world. But people are very unduly influenced by what other people are doing. So even if you give somebody a book to read, and they say, okay, yeah, it was okay, but they tell them it was a bestseller, oh, really? Okay. So then all of a sudden their interest goes up, and they are much more tied in than they should be to other people's opinions. So that would be a Gnevis Das component, presumably. If you're selling something for its actual value, but you're saying, oh, the whole world is buying this, everyone is running after it, even if they aren't. So that ties into the Gnevis Das component, because you're creating this impression that there's more interest than there is, even if the price is accurate. But in the auction context, it would seem like it's Gnevis Mammon also. Because the value of something is defined by what people will pay for it. And you have somebody in the room who's driving up the price by bidding, and he doesn't really have any intention of paying. So he's making a false statement together with the seller, because they're in cahoots, and they're making a false statement that this item is worth more than it really is. So that then ends up leading the actual purchaser to pay more than he should pay. So it would seem like it's real monetary theft. But it's interesting because it's both. It's the Gnevis Das and the monetary theft separately. So you're getting people interested by the competition, and the actual number that ends up being the price is also wrong for its own reason. So you have here separately Gnevis Das and Gnevis Mammon. So there is also a discussion in Postgraphy. You want to comment about that?
No, it's a separate question.
So what about in shuls, where they sometimes have auctions for kibudim? And so if they sell off kibudim and they have somebody playing a role of a fake bidder in the shul, so what about that? So there, it's interesting. There, it seems like it's more a Gnevis Das consideration. And that's got its own problems also, because, first of all, we don't do Tztaka through Gnevis Das. And as we've emphasized, and we'll maybe say a little bit more about. And also, there's an additional level of Gnevis Das, because the people who are bidding, so if you have somebody bidding who isn't really planning on buying it, he was just put there by the Gabbai in order to get other people to bid more. So then you have another level of Gnevis Das, because since we're talking about the mitzvahs, and the whole point is that these people want mitzvahs so badly, halavai, that's the message, but let's think in lofty terms. Okay, these people want the mitzvah so badly that they're willing to pay this much for it, and the truth is they're not. Right? The truth is they're just doing that as a scam, again, to put it mildly. They're just doing that to pump up the price, but they don't really have any intention of actually paying that for the mitzvah. So that would be a problem of Gnevis Das on that level also. What do you think about this case? Let's say you're the purchaser, and somebody is going to sell you land, and they're selling you the land at a lower price, but you happen to know, because you've got all kinds of connections in the government and the real estate world, so you happen to know that the government's going to give some new approval in the next month that's going to make this land much more valuable than the seller thinks it is. Right now, it's only worth what he's selling it for. But you know something that he doesn't know. You have insider information that it's going to soon go up in value. Can you buy it under those circumstances? Any of you real estate moguls out there who have any experience with this? So in the journal Hayashra Vahatov, one of the articles in that journal, it maintains that that's a problem both of Gnevis Das, though it's the unusual kind of Gnevis Das going in the other direction. Price differentials go in both directions. You know, that somebody is not allowed to overcharge or underpay. That goes in both directions. But Gnevis Das less often does that. But you could have some examples. So this might be an example of Gnevis Das in that direction. And the suggestion is also that it's Hashavas Aveda, that if this seller is about to lose out because he doesn't realize what he's selling away, so it's not inform him. The suggestion was that that's a problem of Hashavas Aveda, of not properly respecting the directive of Hashavas Aveda. So that's also interesting. Okay, so those are some of the business-oriented shilas. There are many more, but that's a few. But let's go back to the more everyday kind of context. So where you're stealing goodwill, not necessarily in a monetary environment, but because of your social interactions. Rafi, you raising your hand?
Yeah, I was just going to ask in terms of the kibbutzim thing, let's say if people were bidding like learning, if
Mm-hmm.
So how would they if someone was like just trying to be like a ringer, actually, but someone just wanted to like bid just to like, you know, raise the bar, so give them, you know, learning more than.
So there, it's a good way to narrow it down just to a Gnevis Das issue and not a Gnevis Mammon issue, but it is a Gnevis Das issue, right? Because what you're doing, sir, the one who's bidding, who's not planning on following through, so that is a Gnevis Das on his part. He's creating the impression that he's going to do a lot of learning that he has no intention of doing. That certainly does create a Gnevis Das problem. In addition to, it may just create a personal nether problem. That if somebody raises his hand, now, it's not the Pivalibo Chauvin, it's an interesting question of how binding the nether is, but certainly he's misleading people who are seeing. And that's not the way we want to generate mitzvos in general. That comes up in more mundane contexts because I don't think it's not always intentional, but it does create a certain burden. So when you have a siyum, for example, so I have people, a joint siyum, and people all sign up to be part of the siyum. So it's hard because you got to follow through, both because you don't want the project to fall apart, and also because of your personal commitment. But sometimes people, all of us being human, overestimate how much they're capable of in a certain time, and then find themselves a little stuck. And that's probably a very common reality of human nature. But there is a concern there that if you're going to be representing that you're learning something and you're not doing it, that you're getting credit that you don't deserve. And to do so as a plan in order to drive up the commitments of others, it's misrepresentational, and that's not the way we do mitzvah. It's not the way we look to encourage other people. Okay, so, but to go back into some of the examples that are just about social capital and about our social interactions. So let's say that we know the Gemara gives the example of pressuring somebody to come to a meal, and you're not going to actually have to give them the meal because you know they're not going to come. For whatever reason, you know they're not going to come. So that was one of the examples we saw in the Gemara of a social capital gnevus das, because you'll get the credit for being a good host, and you're not really actually doing anything. There was a story about this. You heard about Herschel Ostropolier? So Herschel Ostropolier was, stories have it, he was a sharp guy who used to win over people with his wit and his intellect. And there's a story they tell about him that you get a little bit of a jump on the Parsha. It's a Parsha's Chukah story. So it's a couple of weeks down the line. We passed June already. But it's the beginning of Parsha's Chukah that they tell this, the first Chazal saying in the beginning of Parsha's Chukah, say, Zos Chukah Satorah Adam Ki Yomus Ba'ohel. So it's talking about the Parah Aduma and about the Hilchos Tumas Meis. So that phrase, that this is the Chukah Satorah, a person who dies in a ohel. So Chazal have a comment that ein divrei Torah miskayim elo misha meimis atzmo aleha, that Torah only survives by people who kill themselves over it, so to speak. So that sounds terrible. What does that mean, to kill themselves over it? So to illustrate the point, they make reference to the story of Herschel Ostropolier. So there was once in old-time Europe, whatever year this was, there was a rich man who was very miserly, and he wanted to have the reputation of being generous when he never really intended to follow through. So it became known that he was inviting poor people to his house for a meal. And what he would do is that they'd bring out very lavish courses, and he would engage the guest in conversation during the meal. And the guest had to be polite to his host, so he'd have to talk. And by the time the conversation was over, he didn't have any time to eat, and they would take the food away. So the host looked like he was very gracious and very generous, but really he wasn't actually providing anything, because he created the environment that the guest felt like he couldn't get around to eating anything. So Herschel Ostropolier felt, okay, I know how to outsmart this guy. So he gets an invitation to this guy's house, and the host brings out the first course. And it's a very appealing first course. And just as Herschel's about to eat, so the host says, so you're from Ostropol. You know, I'm good friends with the Rav in Ostropol. Tell me, how's he doing? And Herschel says, oh, the Rav? He's dead. And the host is shocked. Really? Can't believe it. And he's speechless for a minute. He can't believe that his friend is dead. So while he's speechless, Herschel quickly finishes up the first course. So then they bring out the second course. And again, the host says, I can't believe it. The Rav is dead. Ugh, wow, such a shock. How's the Rebbetzin holding up? And Herschel says, the Rebbetzin? She's dead too. Can't believe it. He's stunned, speechless again. Herschel quickly finishes the second course. So then they bring over the third course, the final course, and the host, I can't believe it, the Rav, the Rebbetzin, they're both dead. So who took over? Was it his Talmud so-and-so? Did he take over? And Herschel says, that guy? He's dead too? Can't believe it. So he's stunned again, and Herschel finishes the last course. And afterwards, I can't believe it, the Rav, the Rebbetzin, the Talmud, they're all dead. What happened? What happened in Astropol? How did they all die? So Herschel said, when I'm eating, everybody's dead. There's nothing else going on. So that's what I meant. So, Tanya, that's also Pshad. Zosa Taira Adam Kiyamas Baho. Rabbi Yitzchak Cohen Shlita gave Sichos along these lines. Says, when you're learning, nothing else is going on. You know, you're able to turn off the whole rest of the world, and no one else exists, so to speak. That's what it means. Ain't the return of Sky Melam Mishamemis Atzmo Ala. So, let's say somebody does that, right? Somebody wants to look like he's a great host, but he doesn't actually plan on actually giving anything. So clearly this guy was not a nice guy, and this person on many levels is not a role model, and that would certainly be a Gnevus Das. He's looking for a reputation as a tzaddik that he definitely isn't. But we saw that, and we mentioned earlier last week, that the poskim do modify this, that to invite somebody who can't come, if you're doing it so the person shouldn't feel left out, or that the person should feel honored by the invitation, so that should be okay. Right? And the Sma and others point to the fact that the language of the Gemara, as Rashi explains it also, Yisarev, Yaftzir, you're pressuring somebody. And you're trying to make a whole show about how eager you are to host them. And you know they can't come. But if it's just an invitation so that they shouldn't feel left out, so that's legitimate. So there are some interesting nuances in Poskim about how to apply that. So some sources, it sounds like this is done only in front of other people, that you don't want the guy to be embarrassed that he wasn't invited. So in front of other people, you invite him even though he's not going to come. And that's because our Gemara also talked about that case where you bring the empty bottle of wine that looks full to the Shiva house in order to create an impression it's a full bottle of wine. But the Gemara says, okay, if you're trying to be mechabed the guy, you want other people to see that you treat him in such high style, so then that's legitimate. So is that what we're talking about here, that it's only if other people are around, so they should see that he's being invited? So some say like that, but it sounds like from other sources that no, even if it's just between you and him, you're worried about his feelings, not just worried about how he looks in front of other people, but you're worried he shouldn't feel left out. It should be okay. But what if you, with that logic, so if that's where you're coming from, so what if you do want to pile it on? So can you keep pushing beyond that initial invitation, right, where you're ready, you'd say that it's Mishum Kvodo, he's not going to feel left out, you know he was invited. So can you then keep piling on, please, please, we really want to have you, if you know for sure he's not going to come? What do you think about that? You're allowed to really pour it on thick beyond the minimum necessary so you shouldn't feel left out. So it sounds like from the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, from the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, that it's okay as long as the standard is, what's the key thing to look for? If you knew he would accept, or if you're afraid he would accept, would you stop? that as long as you're willing to do the follow-through, then it doesn't matter. So if you know he's not going to come, and you're already yotze, not making him feel left out, but you still want to pour it on to add to his covet more, that you assume that to every degree you express your willingness, he's going to feel even more honored. So it sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch Harav, that's also okay, as long as it's not the kind of thing that if you knew he would come, you wouldn't do. But there are those who feel not that way, who feel that, no, that there is a limit here. That at the end of the day, you're still getting credit for something that's not actually going to happen. Right? You're still scoring points off your eagerness to do something that you're not going to have to do. So the only legitimacy was because you don't want him to feel left out. Okay, so then he's not left out if you invite him once. But to pour it on thick after you know he's not coming, so then you are getting points for nothing, you're getting false credit, and they felt that that was problematic also. So again, an interesting machlokas. I hope you agree with me. I find these machlokas fascinating because they just build nuance on top of nuance as far as just what exactly is the standard of honesty here. You know, here the whole concept of Gneivas Das, really, in many of its applications, is telling us that the halacha requires an even greater commitment to honesty than we would have necessarily thought. And some of these machlokas and some of these nuances just highlight added components, which I find particularly fascinating. So I hope you're on the same page with me as finding this interesting. I know it's been a while. I have a few more points just to add tomorrow. I want to go into Nechush, but we're out of time today just about, but I'll add just a few more points. That's okay? Just to some of these cases. And it's a big topic, this Gneivas Das. It impacts everything about our lives. So we have a few more points to add. So we'll just try to do that at the beginning of tomorrow and then move over. But just to quickly recap, so what did we talk about today? We talked about the issue of fluffing up stuff, and we saw a number of nuances in that question. We already recapped that. We talked about the question of getting people to think that something is a better deal. So if you're saying that you're not making any profit off of it, so then there's two added issues of Gneivas Das. One, that you're making it look like the item is a steal, and two, that they should have Hakara Sato for you. So we also talked about a case where that could be divided up. What if you aren't making profit because you got cheated, and now you're passing that on to the next guy, so that's still a problem because he's still getting a wrong impression about the value, even though it is true that you're not really making anything about it. Then we talked about auctions. If you have a ringer in the auction driving up the price, that is both Gneivas Das and Gneivas Mammon separately, because Gneivas Das, by creating the impression many people want this for whatever the price is, and Gneivas Mammon, and the fact that the final price is not going to be a correct price. And we also then discussed how that would apply to kibbutim and shul and other elements. There's also Gneivas Das, that you look like you want to do a mitzvah more than you did. And you talked about even if you're not offering money but offering learning, so the Gneivas Das component would be there as well. We talked also about something from the perspective of the purchaser. Let's say you purchase land at a low price, but you have inside information that it's going to become more valuable because of government approvals or whatever. So then maybe there's both Gneivas Das and Hashavas Aveda, as was pointed out. And Yari, you have a question about that?
Yeah, let's say it's like a 4 years down the line, it's worth a lot more. Is that also?
I mean, it's long term. It's in the future.
He knows he'll move a lot more in 3 years, but he doesn't know that. Like, he doesn't know the whole economy system.
So, you know, some of it gets a little subjective, right? That the idea of your evaluation isn't necessarily factual. You know, if you're assuming this, I want to buy this now because I see it being a more valuable property in the future, it's not the same as you know something is about to change. That is a matter of objective fact. And probably differences as far as that's concerned. Also, time factor does enter into value. So somebody might realize, okay, maybe it'll be worth more later, but I don't want to wait so long, and I need the money now. And also, sometimes something is worth something. This is how old business works, that items become more valuable because of effort that the purchaser is going to put into it. And sometimes the seller doesn't want to put in that effort. So I'd rather sell it to you and let you do what is necessary to make it more valuable. And that's how we all benefit. I get to sell it at the lower price because I don't have to put in the waiting and the effort and everything else to get it to that higher value, or the risk and all those other elements. And you get the greater value, but you had to put in the time and the risk and the effort. And time also equals risk in a certain way, because the further off something is, the more possibility that something will change. See, a Yesod in Hilchos Shabbos, by the way, we talk about Psik Reisha, and one action will definitely lead to another action, but if there's a time delay, so then it's already, many poskim say, it's not Psik Reisha. And one reason is because even if A leads to B, but if there's a lag between A and B, then anything could happen. That's all. Those are all some elements of that. And then just the final recap, we talked about this pressuring somebody to come to your meal when you know they're not going to come. And we said that the poskim say it's mutter if it's just for the person's feelings, they shouldn't feel left out. And we saw some nuances. Some say it's davka in front of other people so that they shouldn't look embarrassed, but probably more than that, that it's true even just between the two of you so that he shouldn't feel left out. And the question of, well, what if once you're doing that, can you pile it on thick? So there's a svara to say yes, that as long as you would follow through if you could, so then you could pile it on thick. And others say no, that even though you would do it, but the fact is you know it's not happening, so you're still getting credit for something you're not actually doing. And the only reason that we allow it at all is because you don't want to insult the person or make him feel bad. But once you're addressing that, that he's not left out, he is invited, so then there's no justification to keep pouring it on just to add more positives at the cost that you're taking credit that you don't necessarily deserve. Okay, so guy, so if you saw the makaris today, the last makar we didn't get to at all, so we have to cover that tomorrow, and we'll make a few additional points. All right, so I wish everyone a safe and healthy and honest day, full of integrity, and should be only good things. And again, I want to encourage anybody who I haven't met one-on-one, please reach out. I would love to schmooze. And hopefully everything should be good. And God willing, I'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you,
Eddie. All right. Have a terrific day. Thank you.